Hello, and good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Magic the First Pioneers podcast. This podcast is all about the Pioneer format and keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I am your host, Kevin, joined here by a special guest and our normal co-host.
Hey, everybody. It's Ryan. How you doing? I think Kevin told me just to keep saying that I'm from the Tokyo area of Japan, so I'll do that today. Okay, and our special guest actually was invited by Kevin this time. So if you don't mind introducing yourself, tell us a little bit about your magic background and all that other fun stuff.
Yeah, all right. So I am ServoToken online, and I like budget decks. I like building decks on the cheap. So I've been playing Magic for probably almost 10 years now, and I started out as a budget builder, so that was like my first mindset coming into the game was I didn't have very much money, so I wanted to figure out how to play, just for what I could afford, and that mentality has just really stuck with me ever since. I've constantly seen throughout my whole time playing other people who are in that position who are like me, so I've always felt that little bit of empathy for them, and I wanted to give people the things that I didn't have when I was starting.
What about Pioneer? When did you get started on Pioneer, and like, what kind of decks do you like to play in Pioneer?
So I've been playing Pioneer since day one. As soon as the announcement came out, I was super jacked for it, because that's just my dream format. It was when I started playing the game, so it's the card pool that I'm most familiar with. And I wasn't really too big on Modern at the time. Yeah, it really appealed to me just from day one. So I've been going full hog at it ever since.
Any favorite deck?
Well, since we've got a budget expert on the show, obviously this week we're talking about Limited. So this is going to be a great budget episode, and I'm really excited. So let me kind of set up a preface of what we're going to really talk about for today's episode. This is something we've done, I think, once before on this podcast, and Ryan and I have done once before on another podcast, and we kind of went out and challenged ourselves to make some budget brews. And we didn't just want to find, kind of meme-y decks that are meme...
Like jank or...
That was supposed to be... Yeah. Yes, there are fun, tier three strategies which can be cheap. What we wanted to do is we wanted to look at kind of the tier one decks in the format. Can you play them on the cheap? Are you able to kind of buy into them? And a big part of that is if you want to buy into the format and play one of the top decks, is there a nice pathway of going from, okay, I've got maybe $40 in my pocket. Can I make a basic version of this deck? Mm-hmm. Maybe upgrade it as I play it a little bit. If I like it, I can keep going and make it better and better. rather than just, having to scrap your whole deck and start over anytime you're trying to advance it. Those are kind of the two things we focused on is budget decks, playing the top decks in the format, and being able to have a nice build path to, top tier one decks in the format.
Yeah.
So what we did is we kind of divvied out some of the top decks. We tried not to do ones we've already covered. If you guys want to hear that, go back and find it. We'll probably link it in our Twitter when we post this episode. But each of us picked two decks, and we made two versions of each of those decks. So we made a $50 version and a $120 version. So that's kind of the idea for this episode. And we can basically just jump into anybody's deck list. Basically, we'll go over individual deck lists. We'll talk about what we could have done differently, why we made some of those choices, and how you might upgrade the deck in the future if you wanted to.
Yeah, so like we said, the rules are $120 for the kind of like the top end budget decks, and then like you said, $50 for like the super budget ones. And I think that's basically the only rule. I mean, you could change the cards around, you can change the deck around, but I'm guessing another rule is it still has to kind of be the same deck, right?
Yeah, at least a little bit. And I don't think any of us had an issue with that this week. We've done things before where like, okay, you have to lose a color to make it cheaper, or even I think there was one time we added a color because we were trying to get something additional. But I have a lot of fun with this. I was really excited, and that's also why I brought on ServoToken. I wanted somebody else to join us in this kind of deck building challenge on how to make these fun and hopefully at least a little bit competitive decks on a very budget price.
As far as like how we're designing these decks, as far as my personal kind of, choice making, I would say I'm trying to keep the general theme of the deck intact. while trying to save money, you know, wherever I can, you know, dropping like
the really big money cards. Start out with a deck list? I'm going to toss it to you, Ryan. You know, we don't want to toss our guest off the deep end, and I feel like I've already been talking a lot. So why don't we jump into one of your lists just to give people an idea of what we're talking about here?
All right. I did two. I did Spirits and I did In Soul, but I think I'm going to start with In Soul just because I felt like I did a better job with the Spirits, and I want to save that for later. Okay. So if you guys don't mind, you know, checking out the Discord and going into the $120 In Soul list and click on that. So
basically, $121. It looks like.
Yeah, is it 121?
I was gonna say, you know, prices change daily. By the time you guys are listening to this, it could be up or down $10 or something. But try not to worry about that.
So basically, I wanted to say, like, you know, why is this a budget deck? Because usually the original price is about $200 to $250, I would say, depending on what you're building, because you have like red, some with red in there, and like, as everybody knows, all the red cards like Spire, or all the red mana like Spire, Bluff, Canal, and Steam Vents are incredibly, incredibly expensive right now. So if you're going to build a budget for Insole, it's probably going to be the white blue version. And I ended up dropping a lot of, I would say, some of like the extra lands and stuff like that. I think some of these had like Mutavault and stuff in there, and I just ended up not dropping that. And also, not Mutavault for this one. Sorry, I'm thinking Spirits. Sorry.
Some had Mutavault. Yeah, I'm seeing lists right now. I'm trying to look at a $200-something tech list.
This one,
some Mutavaults. I see some Hallowed Fountains.
Yeah, this one actually had what was it? The Spear, which is like $20 now. I forgot the one mana spear.
Shadow Spear.
Shadow Spear. There we go. So I ended up like dropping that, I think. And I'm trying to think, what was another one I dropped? But for the most part, it's still there. Like, it's a Lurrus deck. You can still play Lurrus for at the $120 version. You know, a lot of stuff is like pennies on the dollars. You know, like Ornithopter, Womack Courier, Ginger Brutes, Hope of Garapur. You know, these are kind of all budget versions of cards that can kind of, you know, take advantage of the, like the four Gross Fire Blades. And, you know, you also have enough creatures there that, you know, you can still take advantage of Springleaf Drum. You have the Black Staff of Waterdeep. All these are really cheap cards. But because, like I said, I had to drop the Spear, and I'm guessing you have that in there kind of as a way to, how could I say, have some evasion, I would say. So I just put in Zephyr Boots, which gives my creature flying. I don't know if that's probably not the right idea. You guys can rip me a new one for that. But yeah, I'm trying to think. We have All That Glitters and Soul Artifacts. So this is the All That Glitters version that kind of goes and takes advantage of all of these artifacts that you're playing. And, you know, giving this huge, huge attacker, instead of, you know, just kind of like making all these 5/5s. Battlefield Forge is in there instead of the Pathway, because that was kind of pricey. Trying to think. I think I put Field of Ruins in there because there was something else that was like really expensive, another land that was in there. I think I just dropped like one Fountain and one Pathway and just put in two of, you know, like the fields.
Wait, so why Battlefield Forge? That's a red-white land?
Yeah, because of Bomat Courier. To be able to get that effect it. There. And then you already have like your Spire of Industry as well. So anything else? I don't think so. I think also I went to Unsubstantiate in the side instead of the Aether Gust, just to save a little bit more money, because I was trying to get down to like those last few dollars.
Got it.
Yeah, I think it's still a rather powerful deck, but I'd like to hear what you guys have to think. Like, how would you change this?
One thing I really enjoy about this deck is actually the sneaky little red splash for Bomat Courier. Something that the non-budget versions of this deck do is run Soulguide Lantern with Lurrus as a card advantage engine. And I think that's something that's really important for your later game, just in case your early flurry isn't enough to get there. Bomat Courier is actually very powerful when it comes down early or late, so I really enjoy facilitating that even here.
I don't know if you've seen what a Soul Guide lantern costs right now. It's what, like $4 bucks, I want to say?
It's way too expensive. It's
another modern one. Urza's Saga have been driving things up.
Yeah.
I think Zephyr Boots is pretty cool. Most of your creatures don't have flying, and being able to slap some wings onto something that hasn't all the glitters, that's extremely powerful as well. I think this deck is very strong, and since most of the core is, like you said, just so cheap, you can get a lot of power for not very much money with this archetype.
Yeah. The lands are the big, big money thing here.
That
happens a lot. I'm noticing that.
I think that's most of the format is just like lands is 2/3 of your deck, and then everything else is like an uncommon that's a quarter.
Yes, you can build anything if you have the lands. All right.
There's a couple things I would have maybe gone harder in white. I'm surprised not to see Ingenious Smith. I don't think he's very expensive, or like Toolcraft Exemplar. But I guess that's kind of a different deck.
Yeah. This is going more for like the aggro version.
Yeah, this looks good.
Yeah, I like it.
So do you guys want to go back and forth, or should I go with my $50?
I think let's look at the $50 version just to see what you kind of do differently.
All right. So $50 budget, if you guys want to click on that link. Yep. This I had an incredibly hard time doing. I was looking at this for like an hour trying to like cut stuff, and it was just really, really hard to do. And I ended up just cutting out all the other colors and just making this mono blue. That's the only way I could do it, because once you cut out like that land, that's like $70, $80 right there. But it's still pretty much the same. You can still play Stonequail Serpent in this $40 version. You can still play Bomat Courier. I ended up just going like I added Skilled Animator and Animating Fairy, which people maybe don't know about, which is like one of the Eldraine cards that can turn a non-creature artifact into a non-creature artifact into an artifact creature by putting 4/+1/+1 counters on it, which I think is kind of nice, and it's permanent. It's not like Skilled Animator. I thought that might be like nice as a two of. But we still got Ghost Fire Blade, we got Springleaf Drum, we have the Black Staff of Waterdeep, Insole Artifact, Darksteel Citadel, of course, you can use that on your, you can use that fairy's ability on that. I think I ended up getting rid of Battlefield Forge and stuff. I just put Shivan Reefs in there instead, because, you know, you're only using blue and it still gives you the access to the red. And of course you have the Springleaf Drum for the other red if you need it. I think the field originally were like the spires, and I just got rid of the spires because I didn't need them anymore, really. They were just, you know, they were like $15, $16 as well. And then I got rid of all the white stuff in the sideboard as well. Again, using like stuff like, yeah, well, what do I have? I have like Gravedigger's Cage I added in there this time, just because since I'm not playing Lurrus anymore, I can, oh yeah, Lurrus was like another $12 that I lost.
Yeah, definitely.
But Gravedigger's Cage, you might as well play that if you're not playing Lurrus. And then you can also kind of ensoul it if you want. But it also works as, you know, like a nice foil to the graveyard decks out there. So that's the $50 deck.
So I have a few thoughts on this one. I think the thing I'm most surprised with is, you know, you had to get rid of the Lurrus because you couldn't play the white. You couldn't really afford the Lurrus itself. Would have been a quarter of your deck or something.
Yeah.
But it looks like, you know, there's not much that's at the 3 mana cost. I wouldn't have mind seeing, I think Aether Sphere Harvester is one that would really fit well in here. You put any kind of effect, you put a an Ensoul effect on that, and then it still keeps the flying, it still keeps the ability to gain lifelink. That could be really good for this deck, I think.
That's a good idea, actually. I like that idea. I was thinking, like, I wasn't going to play any vehicle other than Smuggler's Copter if I was going to play a vehicle in here, but yeah, I could do that probably.
If we could play Smuggler's Copter, sure.
Yeah. What do you think, Servo?
Yeah, I'm also a big fan of throwing the Harvester in here. By losing Lurrus, you are focusing more on that early game assault. So adding something like a Harvester in will give you the chance to pivot in the later game against an aggro deck, should you need to. That said, because we're losing Lurrus and our longer game backup plan, I think it might be worthwhile to just investigate what going into an all-out aggressive style would look like. So for that, I might cut like the animating fairies because they're very slow and it's the worst of that effect. Go up to 4 black staff, and then I would try to fit 1 or 2 shrapnel blast in as well, because shrapnel blast can sacrifice your redundant black staffs because they're legendary.
How would you keep? How would you add more red access? You know, outside of Shivan Reefs, then.
Yeah, that's like your clinch point, right? So you've got Springleaf Drum and Shivan Reef, which is 8 sources for 2 red cards. I don't think that's the worst. It's not as reliable as it would, you know, it could be. Since you are playing the Field of Ruin, maybe adding 1 mountain to fetch might be worthwhile if you go on that plan as well. But yeah,
you could even probably survive like a temple or a
You have a Snarl. Evolving
Wilds as a way to get red.
You have a Snarl.
You have a Snarl as well.
Yeah, if you want.
I think if I have one more comment, something that I look at when I look at like a $50, you know, this is a very super budget deck. You've got like $12 in your sideboard. You know, you're only going to be seeing those half or 2/3 of your games. You know, you're not going to be bringing them in against every matchup. It seems like I would have preferred to put more of the money into the main deck, make the main deck as strong as possible. And if you've got a little bit weaker sideboard, I feel like when you're going this cheap on a budget, it might be worth, you know, making that difference.
Okay.
I do sort of agree with that point, actually. Because you need to think about the type of people who would buy a $50 Pioneer deck. Like, these people aren't going to GPs, right? They're playing at FNMs and, like, with their friends. So sometimes they don't even sideboard. So
having
20% of your budget in your sideboard, it's not the best for everyone who might be playing the deck.
So just focus on the fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, where do we want to go next on this?
Who goes next, you mean?
I could jump to what I want to call my failure here. I'll go ahead and go next. So I do want to talk a little bit, you know, maybe this is preferencing, maybe it's rambling, is that I was looking at blue-black control as one of the options for decks I was looking at, and I kind of felt like, you know, that deck's not super expensive, but it felt like with a control strategy, if you're playing the second or third best card in some of these slots, that it's just not worth playing that archetype. You're not doing anything unfair. And that sometimes that means that playing a bunch of deck isn't even that viable. And I'm really interested to see what your opinion is kind of, you know, we brought you on as a budget expert. Is that something you've noticed when building budget brews that you kind of want to focus on certain kind of decks?
Yeah. Well, sometimes it depends on the archetype really. So there are certain archetypes, a lot of the aggressive archetypes, that are just really inherently conducive to being budget, because a lot of the aggressive cards are commons and uncommons. See, like Monastery Swift Spear, even though it's a little bit out of budget these days, but originally that was an uncommon, and you could just pick those up in draft piles. So, like, a lot of the aggressive decks are really easy to make on a budget. Going into the more mid-range decks, like we're trying to do with this Arcanist deck, that is where you get a little tricky, because then you're trying to pick up, like, the limited, with limited in mind removal spells, and sometimes those aren't the best, but they're all you have access to, so it really just depends on, like, what you want to go for. Like, some things are, some things aren't. It depends on the things that have been printed, really.
Yeah, so maybe I should have given up a second time because my necklace, so I'm going to start with my $120 red-black Arcanist deck or Rakdos Pyromancer, whichever way you want to call the deck. And it was definitely a challenge here. I think this is one of the most expensive decks in Pioneer, and I did feel when I was going through the deck that there's a lot of card slots where there's kind of no second best choice. So the one I always talk about, I think, is Thoughtseize. There's not really a second-best Thoughtseize or a budget Thoughtseize option. I do end up running a couple of Duress in the main board, but I do feel like that's a big loss in power compared to what you're getting out of Thoughtseize. So that hurt, you know, not being able to run Crux particularly. I managed to fit one into the $120 version, but, you know, it was $25 of that. Even some of the removal, you know, getting to play Kolaghan's Command is like $30. Didn't run that. I didn't run a full playset of Fatal Pushes because of the price. So definitely some unique issues here. Dreadhorde Arcanist itself isn't too bad. It was, you know, $3-$4. Young Pyromancer is like $0.50 to $0.60. So I was able to run those. That kind of made the core of the deck, and from there I tried to see what I could do. So I did make this a Lurrus deck. I managed to fit Lurrus, I managed to fit Kroxa, and I've got a working mono base, you know, definitely some budget versions of what the $450 version would play. And from there I just tried to see what else I could replace. So losing the four copies of Kroxa, I did have to find some other ways to kind of go longer or be more aggressive. I also didn't find room for Stitcher Supplier. Those have gotten strangely expensive.
Yes.
To the point where they're like, yeah, $5 to $8 a piece when I've been looking. I was just looking at some of those. I've got a playset, but I was looking at building another deck that would have used them and realized that they've gone up quite a bit in price. So what I ended up doing is looking at another one drop as both a Monosync and, you know, a slight change in direction. I went with Knight of the Ebon Legion in this version. I also still went with Mire Trident as a two drop in order to give me a little bit of that graveyard filling that I know I'm going to need for Dreadheart Arcanist and for some of my other options. And then because Kroxa isn't taxing my graveyard as much, I threw in a couple copies of Cling to Dust, which is another, you know, one mana spell, as well as another escape, something that uses my graveyard. Other than that, you know, Fatal Push, I made a couple of them into Magma Sprays for a budget. Mm-hmm. I've got, Engrass Rampage instead of Dreadbore as a slightly cheaper alternative without losing much power. And a lot of the rest of the deck kind of remains the same. So felt like it was pretty good. No huge weird things in the sideboard. I didn't get to run some of the really nice things like getting to play more Kolaghan's Command or getting to play... you're just talking about Lantern. That would have been a nice one to put in. But those are places where you could look to upgrade the deck in the future, as well as just, you know, if you've got the Thought Seizes, if you've got the Kroxas, if you've got the lands.
Mm. So,
what do you guys think?
So three things real quick. If you're playing Temple of Malice here, did you ever consider just playing like the Smoldering Boulder or whatever, the Show Me or the Tango Land from Battle for Zendikar, considering that you already have the nine basics in here, as well as two
Smoldering Marsh?
Yeah.
That might have been reasonable. And I think that I wanted, you know, I didn't have too many tap lands. Yeah. I felt like it was reasonable to run that, but maybe that would have been good. I am paying for the Dragon Skull Summits.
Exactly.
Maybe it would have been better to turn them on.
Yeah, it's easier to turn those on, I was going to say. So that's one thing that I would maybe take a look at. And it's cheaper, too. Like, they're, you can get, like, what? I don't know. They're like 50 cents probably. I'm not sure, but they're super cheap. Another one is, did you consider Bedlam Reveler? I know you're playing Lurrus, but, you know, could that maybe be a sideboard card or something like that? You're playing a lot of instants and sorceries. It would be super cheap and a great way to refill your hand. Like, what do you
think? Maybe that's something I should consider for my super budget version. I think I had meant to go back and look at a few more options there.
Okay. And the other thing is land that I can't remember the other thing at the moment. So, Servo, I'll hand it over to you while I try to remember what the third thing was.
Gotcha. I was actually also going to say Bedlam Reveler seems really sweet in this deck. Because you're not eating your graveyard, like you said, with Kroxa, you've got that extra utility of, you'll probably have, you know, four or five instants of sorceries at any given time. One big change that I would make with this deck is Village Rites. One of the main things that you do in the full version of this deck is to cast a Village Rites on a 2-mana Kroxa. Because you don't really have as much access to that, I might consider trimming back on Village Rites for some other card advantage card, maybe something repeatable, like Underworld Connections.
Well, that one's another 3 mana, but that's a good idea as something else.
I do like the whole removal suite here. For some reason, all of these like very good black and red card like spells are super cheap still, even though all the tier 1 decks play them.
Blood Chief's Thirst is a good one for 50 cents.
Yeah, definitely. Angrath Rampage also is a card that really impressed me when I played the full version of this deck. So that might also be something to consider going up to 4 of. But yeah, I like the construction here. I think it's a good approximation of the full thing. I will also second the mana base swapping temples for the Tango lands. When I'm making budget lists, that's like my favorite thing to do is have an untapped Dragon Skull Summit with a Tango land, because it's basically free. You're playing a bunch of basics anyway, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's yeah, it. That's like why it's there. Sense. That's why the Tango lens are there. They're there for budget players, honestly.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
All right. So I'm going to take some of your suggestions to heart when I'm looking at my $50 version as well here. So this one was in some ways trickier, in some ways not. I really, you know, couldn't run Crocs at all. I couldn't run Lurrus. That did mean that I got to open up to a few of kind of 3-mana, 4-mana spells. And I went with a couple of different options here. So I kept the core the same. Still have the Young Pyromancer. Still have the Dreadhorde Arcanist. Still have Claim to Fame. So I'm still looking for kind of 2-mana things. I'm looking for some amount of Village Rites to go along with my Pyromancers. And I was kind of trying to go a little bit further on kind of that sacrifice theme. At least a little bit. So I've got a couple of Woe Striders here. I've got a couple of Immersturm Predator is something I was trying out. Although thinking about it, I don't hate the idea of Bedlam Reveler in that slot. Might be really good. But a little bit, you know, just that sacrifice. I've got Foulmire Knight as my replacement one drop because I couldn't run the Stitcher Supplier, and he's just another kind of card advantage thing that I don't mind sacrificing, which goes along with some of the rest of my sacrifice themes, as well as some things like Claim the Firstborn in the sideboard. I know is something that early versions of Pyromancer would do, and since I've got a little bit stronger sacrifice theme, I thought that I could go back to that. You know, some of those, some of Spark Harvest, to try and play on that idea. Other than that, in this version, you know, the mana base being cheaper, not running the Croaks and not running the Lurrus, that's the big difference. Looking at removal, I did have to trim back further on some Fatal Pushes. Lash of Malice is actually one that I really liked. I almost played 4 copies of this. You know, it's just a target creature gets +2/-2, but it ends up working really well with some of our creatures like Dreadhorde Arcanist. You can make it up to a 3 power to do 3 damage, mm-hmm. or to recast something like a Go Blank or a Claim to Fame from your graveyard, which is a rather nice, actually.
Nice.
Some Magma Sprays, again using the Village Rites, again using Go Blank, which has just been a really strong card in the actual version of the deck as well. Let me see if there's anything else here that's a real call-out. You know, I ended up with some Tybalts in the sideboard. I think that the main version has run some other things, but I wanted just something that would prevent life gain, you know, make some repeatable tokens, and I felt like that was perfect mm-hmm. for that.
Yeah, I like it. And you got the Smoldering Marsh in there that time, too. And I love the... You got the Shadowlands, too, the Foreboding Ruins. It's hilarious. Totally forgot that was a card. Yeah,
those are rough.
Yeah.
They don't come up... I mean, again, you can still show a Smoldering Marsh for one of those, so that helps a little bit with those mm-hmm. coming in untapped, but they're not my favorite.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, is there no Snarl? Or, and that's basically what the Snarl is. Never mind.
Yeah, the Snarl's finished that cycle of lands.
I gotta say, the ally color mana on a budget is the most painful thing I have ever experienced.
Yeah.
It's not great.
No pain lands, no fast lands. Yeah.
Well, wait till you see what I did with my next one. But we'll come back to that after we pass it to our guest for one of your lists here. And I'm really excited to see these because, you know, I took a peek at them, but I want to go through them with you and see what you did.
Sure. So I'll start off with the cheaper of the full versions, and I did mono black aggro for my deck. So with this archetype, a thing that I noticed, and I'm sure is obvious to everybody, is that there's 2 expensive cards in this deck, and that's it. Everything else is like $3 at the most. Rankle's a little expensive, but the rest of the deck is extremely cheap. So when you cut Thoughtseize and what's it called, Mutavault, yeah, this deck is basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
So we made a couple concessions in the spell base, cutting Fatal Pushes a little bit because they're a little expensive. We're using Drill Bit instead of Thoughtseize because attacking means we have a 1-mana Thoughtseize anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so not having a Thoughtseize on turn 1 isn't the hugest downside. It can make or break a couple of matchups, but one thing to note about budget players is they're typically not trying to take down GPs, so we don't need to play 100% optimally. But for the $120 version of this deck, the entire creature base is the same minus 1 Rankle. So yeah, this deck was extremely easy to make for this version. So very few changes.
So So if somebody played back in M14, M15, Ravnica standard, and they've got the Thought Seizes and the Muta Vaults already in their collection, might be a really cheap deck to pick up.
Yeah, if you played during Theros, the Mono Black Devotion deck, you've already got the whole deck. So just spend the extra $10. One thing that actually has really impressed me is the creature land cycle from the D&D set. So like in this deck, we're using Hive of the Eye Tyrant. They're a little expensive, but mana-wise, but they're very cheap dollar-wise. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're very impressive for budget decks.
Yeah, I like it. I like that you went the whole snow-covered land route as well with Faceless Haven, so you can still kind of emulate the original version of Mono Black. You know, you're not, like you said, you're not playing the Mutavolt, but it's still a good long game thing to have. You're not going to be paying absolutely. It early on, but
it is unfortunate that the snow-covered swamps here in your list are running at about $1 each, because that's kind of doubling your price of your Faceless Havens.
Right. I'm not sure if that's
you could almost,
is that a goldfish thing? I'm not sure. Like, I bought my snow-covered swamps for, like, a penny, so I don't know if that's real, but
maybe it's just those new ones.
Could be. They were in standard. You should have them anyway, so
I have zero.
Oh, no.
I haven't bought any of those cards. I've bought zero packs. Yeah, but anyways, that's another topic.
But yeah, this deck was pretty straightforward. So we can move on to the $50 one, where a couple more changes were made. So for
felt the pinch a little bit more. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So for this, the first obvious thing that jumps out is the mana base is atrocious. all of the creature lands are super expensive. So we're using some of the bad ones, like Crawling Barrens. And if you don't know what that card does, that's fine. It's terrible. We are going with a Rakdos Cackler as a one drop instead of Knight of the Eben Legion. Hmm. So that kind of cuts down on some of our later game potential, but we still have that early explosiveness of a two power one drop. We still have the recursive package of Bloodsoaked Champion and Scrap Heap Scrounger. And then as we go up the curve a little bit, we've got my favorite Pioneer card is Mogus' Marauder.
Love it.
No one knows what it does, and it's the biggest blowout ever. So they quit printing Intimidate for a reason, because it's a very strong ability. So being able to slam this down on like turn 5 with two other 1-drops and give them haste and essentially unblockable is extremely strong, and I think makes up for losing a card like Rankle that to give you that extra bit of evasion. And then we're still going with our spell package of the cheap black spells that we mentioned earlier, the Heartless Act and the Blood Chief's Thirst, and still using Drill Bit as a Thoughtseize.
I mean, it is budget, but I would like to say that it is also very consistent. It looks very consistent, which is very important, especially if you're going to play a little bit of a cheaper deck, because, if you're just throwing a lot of random stuff, in their left and right, it's not going to work as well. You're still going to get wins off of this, even if it's only $50, I think.
Right, yeah. I think one thing that a lot of people trip up on when they're trying to do budget is they try to find direct analogs for the expensive cards without considering the fact that they're losing power in their deck. And one way to make up for losing raw power is by adding synergies.
Yeah.
So a lot of the synergistic cards in the format are extremely cheap. So take what we're doing in this deck, for example, with Mogus' Marauder. That deck synergizes very well with all of our 1-drops. And it gives us back a lot of the power that we're missing by taking out the expensive cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, I think the one thing that worries me a little bit is that, without the Rankle, you are more vulnerable to one of the most popular sweepers in Shadow's Verdict, just running another 3-drop there. I'm not sure if I can think of a great alternative, though. Maybe... what about something like Gurmag Angler? I know those aren't very expensive. Did you think about a copy of that?
Can't put them in the graveyard, though. Or, you can't use the graveyard much.
Yeah, this isn't a deck that's like super conducive to filling the graveyard early. So that would be like a I think that would be a plan if you didn't have access to the creature lands. But since you do have that like backup late game plan of, you know, animating your terrible crawling barons, I don't think you need to play something like Gurmag Angler. But if you didn't have those, yeah, I would definitely consider that.
And by the way, Kevin, I remember what I was going to say earlier about your Arcanist deck. You were talking about how expensive the Stitchers were getting. They were like $5 or $6. Yeah. They're $16 in Japan now.
Oh, man. I think you'd said that too.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to remember. Sorry. Anyways.
Why don't we... Yeah, I'm loving this. I enjoy these so much. It's just so cool to see, like, when you think... Exactly what you're saying is that, you know, we're not just trying to find one-to-one analogs for the strong cards. We're trying to find other things that fill those roles, that let you do differently powered things to work from a different angle. And that's what's so exciting about these kind of budget decks. Mm-hmm. Which will lead us back to our second go-around, where we're going to give it back to Ryan.
Okay. So we're going to do my second choice, which was... spirits. And it's strange that I'm doing blue, because I am not good with blue. And if you guys have problems with these decks, it's because I'm doing blue. I never do blue. I do not know how to choose, you know, blue lands, blue mana bases, or counter spells. I just, yeah. But anyways, so we have our $120 and we have our $50 version. Let's take a look at the $120 version first, which actually is down to $118. Nice. I can add something back in there. So yeah, a lot of this, I think usually the price is like I said, like $250 or so. And a lot of that comes out of like the Mutavaults. If they're playing it, especially in a blue-white version, maybe they're not playing it in the Bant version. And of course, you're playing Bant, you're playing Company. That's adding even, like $60, $70, I think, to the cost.
So, yeah, so the Bant ones run like $350 to $400. The blue-white ones can be, you know, $250.
Yeah.
I see a one for
it. Yeah, so, but they do, like I said, they run Mutavault sometimes. So that gets dropped. The mana base is largely intact, though. We still got our Hallowed Fountains, Pathways, and Glacial Fortresses. You can still play those in the $120 version. And you're playing most of your spirits as well. You still got your Lord. You have your Supreme Phantom in there. You have your Empyrean Eagle, which is like your other Lord. You know, spirit that also gives other flyers +1/+1. This is kind of more leaning towards the flyer version of spirits, where you have the Watcher of the Spheres that makes all your other flying creatures cost one less, and it gets a buff whenever you play a flying creature. It's got Shacklegeist, which is, I guess that's been seeing a lot of play recently, but tap two untapped spirits and then tap a creature you don't control. It's not playing the 3-mana one that exiles stuff. I forgot its name. The new
Skyclave Apparition.
Yeah, because that's really pricey. I also cut what was the other one? Spell Queller, just because it's also kind of pricey. I think that was like, I want to say it was like $7-8 a piece, and like four of them were like $30. So I cut that. And also, the Restless Spirit's really expensive. So I...
You mean Selfless Spirit?
The Selfless Spirit. Spirit's really expensive. I think those are like $8 a piece as well. So I end up cutting all that stuff. Instead of the Selfless Spirits, I ended up bringing in Lamvala, which kind of emulates it rather well. It's a flyer, so she gets, you know, one cheaper from like the Watcher of the Spheres. And she still buffs, you know, the Spheres and gets buffed by the Eagle. She has a similar effect of, you know, you can sacrifice her and your guys either get hexproof or indestructible. It's not an instant speed, sadly, because, you know, she's not a spirit and you can't be flashed in with a card like Rattle Chains. But still, you get a good that similar effect, which I think is really nice. And then also, instead of the Spell Queller, I'm using Nebelgast Herald just to give you kind of more of that tempo. You're not going to be able to stop their spells from being cast, but you can still tap down pretty much anything they play, you know, with that. And then, of course, you have Lofty Denial in there because this is a Flyers deck. Is there anything else we need to talk about? I don't think there's really anything else. Yeah, I ended up... There was, like, another Restless Spirit in the sideboard that I was looking at, and I just switched that with Lamvala. Everything else, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. So what do you guys think?
So this deck is pretty sweet. Spirits is a very strong deck in the format right now, and I think that this is a pretty good approximation of the full deck, even without the flash benefit of Collected Company. You've still got all the tricky interaction that the archetype provides while coming in at a reasonable budget. So, yeah, I think this is pretty good. I do have two includes, although they do change the deck pretty fundamentally and pivot it from a more tempo-oriented list to a very aggressive list. Mm. And that would be Favorable Winds and Rally of Wings.
Yeah.
So those are both basically flying anthems that will buff your entire team and really take you from a tricky spirits deck that wants to like mess with your opponent to just a beat down flyers list. Mm-hmm. And
And that's always the choice. You know, you can, it's always been kind of a versatile deck that you can audible rather easily. So yeah, I could definitely see that. And that would probably save you some money too. Favorable Winds isn't too expensive, right?
Right. Yeah. I think they're like a quarter, but yeah. Even picking both of those up and just having them and this list so that you can, check out the room before your FNM, mm-hmm. see which of the two lists you think might do better that night, and then, swap a couple cards around. You'd be able to, have a very versatile deck mm-hmm. With this list.
I like this. I was worried to try and do spirits because I did know that Modern had driven a lot of spirits prices up quite a bit. You were talking about how Selfless Spirit has been like a $10 card at one point.
Yeah.
Spellqueller can be, $6-$7. Mm-hmm. I do think that one of the biggest things, though, you took out Spellqueller, and that was kind of one of the few interactive cards in the deck. And putting in Nebelgast Herald, I feel like, isn't quite as interactive. A card I wouldn't mind seeing would be Hanged Executioner, if you've played that one.
Is that the Exile?
It's another spirit. Yeah, it's a 3-mana spirit. It's a 1-1, but also makes a 1-1 when it enters, and you can exile it to exile a creature by paying some mana. I think that might be an option, especially if you're going a little bit more aggro, with more lords, mm-hmm. if you do the, Selfless Winds or whatever. Plus, it would pump your Watcher twice, it would pump your Mausoleum Wanderer mm-hmm. twice. Maybe that would be another option instead of the Nebelgast.
I did look at it. I just was thinking, I wanted to go tempo because I've always kind of seen Spirits as a tempo deck.
Yeah, I do think that the Spellqueller is probably the biggest loss here. Like, that's a big draw to the deck. I think that if you were to put more money into it, that's probably the first mm-hmm. place I would suggest to. But I do think that you've got quite a good list here. I think it could probably be pretty aggressive. And kind of on what we had just said is that, maybe Spectral Sailor, if we're not a version that can answer everything, maybe there's a more aggressive card for that slot, mm-hmm. or maybe you have to trim those a couple bit, because, maybe you won't be able to consistently be going long game drawing cards, or maybe it's your only option there. So I think this is pretty good. I think that there's a lot to like here. I'm happy that you were able to fit in a full 4 copies of Mausoleum Wanderer. You're able to fit in the 4 Supreme Phantom. Maybe those are down a little bit with Spirits being a little less popular. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is definitely one of those decks that you can pick up cheaper as the metagame changes, I think.
Yeah.
Should I jump to the $50 version?
Yeah, let's see what you did there.
All right, let's check out the $50 version. So $50 version is... I think I pretty much just cut all the good mana out. I got rid of like the Hallowed Fountains, yeah. and I got rid of the Glacial Fortresses and also the Pathways, and I saved like $100 right there. I went the Unclaimed Territory, Prairie Stream, Port Town route, and then have like 10 basics. So like my entire mana base is like $12, which is great. Mm. We're still missing, like we said, the fast lands and the pain lands and stuff, but I think it's serviceable. I think it'll be fine.
Can I ask which of these you built first, just out of curiosity?
I built the 120 first, of course.
Hmm, okay.
And then I just took that apart again. And then I didn't change anything in the main board. The creatures are all still the same. Spectral Sailor, Wanderer, Rattlechange, Shacklegeist, Phantom, etc. So you're not changing any of your game plan, really. And then I think I got rid of some stuff in the sideboard as well. So, like, we still have Linvala in there. Instead of, like, a Settle the Wreckage, to get rid of, really fast aggro decks. I'm just playing Forbidding Spirits, which you can flash in if you have Rattle Chains in play, and then they can't attack unless they pay two for each of those creatures. Unsubstantiate instead of Aether Gust to save money on that. There's really not much else that I changed. It's pretty much all lands that I got rid of. Is that the right choice? I don't know. That's why I'm that's why I have you guys here.
Yeah. So you did my favorite thing in budget deck building, which is using Unclaimed Territory just as a dual land. That's, I think, my favorite hack just when going at this type of list. Because you can name Spirit, obviously, and then the other two cards are Wizards.
Yeah.
So, yeah, between the two of those, you've got just a perfect painless dual land, and I think that's very cool. Forbidding Spirit in the sideboard was actually one of the cards I was going to recommend for the $120 version as well. I think that flashing that in with Rattle Chains is very powerful, because it basically is just a Time Walk plus a 3-3. So, yeah, I think that this deck is, it doesn't lose, like, anything as you get on the budget, aside from the lands. And most of those still come in untapped anyway. So, yeah, I think this is very powerful, and, yeah, you did a good job.
Yay.
Yeah, the $50 is might be one of the scarier ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
This is really strong as a $50 deck, I think. You, like, seriously, like, you just start building up your land base, you know, over time. But yeah, you get that, get those regular cards, boom, you're good to go. And then just start throwing in your Glacial Fortresses and Pathways as you get them.
All right, any last comments?
No, I'm good.
All right, I'm going to jump into, you know, I made it hard mode this time around. My next deck that I wanted to go over is Enigmatic Incarnation, which is a fun deck. I thought I was going to have a lot of fun with this, and I did, because it's a deck that runs a lot of one-ofs and things. So when I'm looking for budget versions, I got to, you know, really, really go deep on the format, looking at what some options would be. And I was actually surprised. You know, there were a lot of cards that are core to this deck that are not expensive. Putting the whole thing together ended up being pretty reasonable. I was able to fit in some powerful cards, despite the fact that, you know, because it's a Yorian deck, that means I've got to fit, you know, 50% more cards almost in the same amount of budget. So that was an interesting challenge. The biggest challenge, of course, is that this is a 5-mana deck, and I'm trying to build a budget mana base, so that got exceedingly difficult. You know, I would love, with the normal version of the deck, we run... Here, let me see how much a stock version runs Triomes, because I'm going to bet it's a lot. So I just pulled up 5, 6... So yeah, 6 Triomes. Another 3 there. So 9 Triomes. Those are quite expensive right now. Those are like 10, you know, $8 to $12 each. In the $120 version, I did end up forcing some Triomes, and there's a couple reasons why. One is that I really wanted to have Forest plus X for Binding of the Old Gods. You know, that can find any forest, so one of the most important things to do is you find a Triome. It already comes into play tapped, and that lets you fix your mana with that card. The other important thing is that I wanted mountains, so I wanted to have Mountain X and the Triomes have the mountain type, because I need to be able to turn on Chain to the Rocks. So that's most of what I did for the mana base. You know, I've got some Evolving Wilds as a budget option, I've got some basics, I've got a whole bunch of different temples, so it'll end up being a lot of tapped lands, but hopefully, you know, you can hit Fires of Invention and then the tapped lands don't matter so much, and they can actually be really good. That's the mana base. As far as the main deck, so the, you know, the most important cards, Enigmatic Incarnation, not an expensive card, less than 50 cents. Fires of Invention, less than 50 cents. And then a lot of the targets that you'd like to hit end up being pretty cheap. You know, they're kind of one-ofs here and there. So a few things that I did have to cut on. One of the big expensive cards in the normal version is the Scarab God. I was looking at a few different options to replace that with. I wanted another 5-drop. Ended up going with Kenrith, the Returned King. And this is something we saw in early versions of the deck. You know, it runs about $5, but has some great abilities, and especially if you've got Fire's Invention in play, you can just, you know, go ahead and run away with the game. As far as other 5-drops, you know, Tulsimir is still cheap. Yorian's reasonable. I've got one in the sideboard, one in the main. We've got some removal spells. You know, I manage one Skyclave Apparitions. It's, you know, it's an $8 card, but when you only need one of them, you're going to be finding it out with your Enigmatic Incarnation. So it's nice that a toolbox budget deck kind of works, because as long as your toolbox cards are cheap, your the special cards you're finding, you know, your one-ofs, they can be a little bit more expensive, and it doesn't matter. So those are the big ones. I did manage to find room for a rest in peace in this version. I couldn't in the cheaper version. That's a big difference, I think, with that one that I'll get to. Other than that, no huge changes, I feel like, from what I would play in the non-budget version of this deck.
Yeah, I think the hardest part here is that mana base. Just the the gymnastics, the mental gymnastics that you have to go through to, like, you know, what do I have to play first? And, you know, how do I, you know, cast this? And what do I need here? And, yeah, that's hard. Like, this seems like a deck. You learn it. You can save yourself a lot of money, you know, playing with this.
Yeah, I will also say a couple things I was finding as I was testing this is, you know, with the Enigmatic Fires, the non-budget version, Omen of the Sea is probably your best draw card at 2. Whereas with this version, I did lean a little bit more towards things like Nylea's Presence, which is a little bit less powerful, but it helps you A, fix your mana, B, turn on your Chain to the Rocks. So that ends up being more important than having the couple of scries.
Interesting. Okay. What do you think, Servo?
So when I clicked this deck list and opened it, I was afraid. This is a very daunting deck list. It's got 95 cards in it and about 70 different cards. So, yeah, if you're listening to this and haven't seen an Enigmatic Incarnation deck list, it's a treat. So as for the what's actually the cards that are in the deck, I really enjoy Nylea's Presence. I think that's a good add. I don't know if the full version plays it, but your mana is, like we said, the biggest struggle here. So being able to have that just consistent five-color land will definitely take you a long way. That said, the World Tree is also very powerful in this strategy. I might even consider going up to two of those just because... having that rainbow land is very pivotal.
I'd had a second one and I cut it. Yeah, that was a cut I ended up making.
You have $3 you can still put in there, man.
That's true. Yeah, right now it's still showing at 117.
Yeah. the temples, I think, are a very smart add because scrying deeper will definitely help you push through those questionable hands that you'll draw with this deck where, like, you have one colored source that you need and... than like two off-color temples. So yeah, I think that's very powerful. And then in the sideboard, Nyx Fleece Ram is my favorite card from Journey to Nyx, so 10 out of 10 from me. Yeah, I think this looks very solid.
Yeah, and it's an enchantment, so you can sack it and turn it into you know, Skyclave Apparition or something.
There you go.
You guys want to dive even deeper into the $50
version? I'm afraid of this one too. Yeah. Oh, this one's not as bad.
So I set a few things up with this, you know, saying that I did try and go, you know, even further with the Nylea's Presence. You know, Lithoform Blight can also work to turn something into a five-color land, although that's a little painful then. You know, a couple more Paths of the World trees just to be able to fix my mana when it's bad. But the big thing I did here is that, you know, this is 34 lands, and it's about $6 of lands in this deck. So really barely spent anything on my lands in order to keep the main deck intact. And the way that I did that is by going to Guild Gates. You know, they're not pretty. They don't even scry like the temples do. But there's actually a few cards that, as long as I'm going into Guild Gates, they end up being pretty nice for the main deck. So with the gates, I've got a couple of Gatebreaker Rams. You know, that's a 2-2 that gets plus one for each gate I control, and if I have two or more, it has Vigilance and Trample. So this is often, you know, a 5-5 Vigilance Trample or bigger than that, and it's something, it's a 3-drop, which is the perfect spot to be finding it with any of my Enigmatic Incarnation triggers, as well as I've got a one of in here of the, what is it called? The Angel... Why is it not showing up on my list here? Oh, here we go. Archway Angel. Yeah. Angel. It was by mana cost, not by alphabetical. So this is a 6-mana angel, 3/4 flying, and when it enters, you gain 2 life for each gate you control, which is going to be a lot in that point of the game, and it gets even scarier when you're a Yorian deck and have ways to blink this and flicker it. So those are kind of the couple payoffs, as well as I do drop in a couple of Guild Summit is another Gates Matter card, as well as an enchantment, so it synergizes decently well with the deck. You can flicker it with Yorian and draw a whole bunch of cards late. So like you were kind of saying, I'm taking a big power drop by going with these Guild Gates instead of, you know, Triomes and Shocklands, but I am finding a few ways to draw some power out of that. Other than that, Not too many things changed. I did even drop, I couldn't run the Kenrith that I ran in the slightly more expensive version, but what I did get to play is the Scorpion God, who actually did surprisingly well whenever I got a chance to see him. You know, it does have another way to, you know, spend mana to do things. I ended up putting a Doomwake Giant in here just because I didn't have great sweeper options, and it's another 5-drop that I can find, plus I wanted a couple of 5-mana enchantments in order to go up to 6 mana for that angel. Yeah, that's kind of the big parts. Sideboard looks pretty similar. You know, I've got some Gates Ablaze as a gate sweeper in there. I've got some hate for Jund. I've got some hate for Control. I've got some hate for Combo. I've got Gruul Charm for Spirits. You know, just kind of a little bit of everything.
So I think I'm going to ask something that many people are going to ask about this. Why no Maze's sure. End? If you're playing all these guild gates, why no Maze's End? As an alternate win.
I know. I didn't want to. I was thinking about it. I just didn't want to play.
You're like 90% there.
I know. We were close. And then, I probably could have forced it, but
you have Nalia's Presence and Lithiform Blight, so you could definitely turn it into a color-producing land. So that's just an idea.
Let me see how much it runs. I don't think I even checked
the $3
price. Okay. So yeah. Maybe could have. I don't think that it's something you would often win by doing that.
No.
But what I did find testing this is that even though the power level is a little lower, this is such a deck that when it's winning, snowballs so hard mm-hmm. that you don't kind of run out of steam. As long as you can hit your main key cards,
yeah.
you're going to just snowball with this deck, yeah. Regardless of how messy everything else is in here.
What do you think, Servo?
Yeah, so I'm going to ask a question that I'm sure a lot of people have. Why no Maze's End?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I actually don't think that Maze's End is the best for this deck, actually.
You guys are no fun.
Well, it's good. I love Maze's End. I love me an alternate win condition. But I think that it's very slow in this deck, and you're just not going to have the time with all the other cool stuff you're doing. Like, the yeah. Scorpion God, I think, is probably the coolest card in this deck. Because it's both.
Yeah, I had to call it out.
Yeah, both removal, card draw, and your opponent just can't get rid of it. So, yeah, I think this deck does a very good job of maintaining the idea of the archetype while still providing that that $50 option just to, you know, play a cool deck for cheap.
Yeah, and if I were to get, you know, 10% more budget because I was doing, you know, if I could add $5 more, I think that Rest in Peace is the biggest card here that I'm missing. That's really important for a lot of matchups. So that's probably the first card I would look to if I could add, you know, another $5 here. I couldn't find room for it.
It's so budget here. I mean, it's amazing how cheap these cards are. It's cool. I'm glad that you can build this type of deck and, you know, for $50, to be honest. So people could definitely explore. You know, this archetype, you know, people, I would think that's the biggest thing is they worry about the land, you know, and you mm-hmm. found a way to kind of get around that. So bravo.
All right. Why don't we go to our last one, give back to Servo Token and see what the last one's going to look like.
All right. So for this deck, I chose to, go for blue, red Arclight Phoenix. So, what we're doing for the $120 list is, for creatures, we're playing the Arclight Phoenix, of course, and Crackling Drake, as we have in the full version, as well as Magmatic Channeler. I tinkered around with a non-budget Phoenix list for a couple weeks, and I found this card to be very powerful, even in the full list. It's really a meta-dependent thing, but since we're going budget here, I think that this is a solid option, regardless of what you're going to be facing. And then as we move into the spells, we have basically the stock list. So Lightning Axe, Opt, Shock, Chart of Course. We only have one Expressive Iteration, because for some reason that card's like $10.
Yeah.
Is a charm. Lightning Strike. I know a lot of people don't play Lightning Strike in their lists, but I like a good burn route, and burn spells are cheap. Then we also have Strategic Planning and Treasure Cruise. Mm. So mana for this one, we are missing all of the good lands, of course, because people love to play blue-red, so all the blue-red lands are expensive. So we're playing the River Glide Pathway, Shivan Reef, and Sulphur Falls. And then into the sideboard, there's a lot of cards that people play against, like, control decks that are very cheap, like the Ral Is It Viceroy and Narset, as well as, like, a backup threat. There's a lot of people that play, like, Sprite Dragon, but those cards are also, like, $3, $4 each, so I went with Young Pyromancer. I do have the Anger of the Gods as well as a sweeper, and then just some other random sideboard stuff like Negate and Aether Guest. That's pretty typical. This is a basically another of the take a tier one deck, take the good lands out, put the bad lands in, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, I like it. Especially it's blue-red. Blue-red having access to Shivan Reef just makes this so much more of a viable deck than like Spirits, I think, when you go budget, just because, you know, there is nothing else that you can play in Spirits, for example. But here, yeah, you get rid of your $80 of Spire Bluffs and $60 or $70, you know, worth of Steam Vents, and you're still good to go. Sulphur Falls, Pathway, Reef, still great cards.
Yeah, for sure. The enemy color pairs are just miles ahead of the Allied in Pioneer. And I can't wait until that is no longer the case.
Me too.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so, I really like this.
Yeah.
So, this is exciting. So you did lose Brazen Borrower from the main list. You know, those are like $20 cards, and the main, you know, the non-budget version probably runs one or two. I think that's a perfectly fine cut. I can't think of anything else here that I'd be like, oh, why haven't you tried anything? Yeah, this looks great.
Yeah, there is like Thick in the Ice that some of the decks play, and you could probably fit like two of those in if you really wanted to, and if your meta called for it. But, So, that list is boring. We'll go to the exciting one, which is the $50 $50 deck. And for this one, this is the, I think, the only list of our six where the main, like, cards aren't in the deck, because Arclight Phoenix is $40 for a playset. Yeah. So, I decided to go with a blue-red Drake's list, which is pretty close to the same. We're still playing the Magmatic Channeler, the Young Pyromancer, instead of the Arclight Phoenixes, and then we're up to four Crackling Drakes as well. And in the spells, we still have our typical burn suite of Lightning Axe, Shock, and Lightning Strike, as well as our usual draw spells as well of Treasure Cruise, Strategic Planning, Is It Charm, Tread a Course, Opt. And then we're also playing the Maximize Velocity in this version for the quote-unquote combo with Crackling Drake to attack in with a hasty 11-11 or whatever it turns out to be. Then moving over to the mana, we are playing the Frostboil Snarl, which is the Strixhaven version of the Shadowlands. Shivan Reef, Sulphur Falls, and I put a couple of Volatile Fjords in, which is the comes into play tapped Snowlands from Kaldheim. And that's just for the basic land typing to turn on the Sulphur Falls and the Snarl. I usually don't like to play a lot of those, but it is a tool in the budget deck builder's, you know, toolkit. Having those basic land types is pretty pivotal. And the deck can afford a couple of tap lands over playing a couple basics. I think it helps out.
Now, one thing I wanted to say is, wasn't there like another Drake that we could put like a 3-mana one?
That was my thought too, is, you know, this Enigma Drake at 3-mana, it doesn't draw the card and it doesn't count the ones that are in exile, are the two big differences. There's also, I'm trying to find the card, it was a 4-mana one that I want to say, when we had Jonathan Medina for our set review, he liked it from Strixhaven. I'm trying to find the card, but it made a token that was equal to the number of instants and sorceries in your graveyard and exile. Trying to see if I can find what that card was. I don't know if it would actually be good, but that's what it was. if I find that, I'll let you know.
Gotcha. I considered the other Drakes, like the Enigma Drake, but one thing about playing that specific like archetype of card, because there's like three or four of them, Spellheart Chimera is another one, they just die instantly, and if you get no value off of them, it's a major feel bad, and that can actually lose you a game. So if a Crackling Drake comes down and eats a removal spell, you still draw a card, so like you're still up on that exchange. So that's why we're playing Young Pyromancer, so when we play it on turn 3, we can still get the value out of it when it gets instantly removed with one of our 1-mana instants.
I wonder if there's some cheap way to, like, combo off here. You know, like, to not combo off, but, like, to, like, Storm or something like that.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm not sure what we could do with that. One thing that someone in another Discord that I'm in really enjoys is Torrent Sculptor, I think it's called. It's the blue-red flip card from Strixhaven.
Mm-hmm.
And you can exile an instant or sorcery with it, and it becomes as big as that card's mana value. So you can like exile a Treasure Cruise with it, and it gets plus oh,
yeah,
eight, plus
yeah,
eight.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
That's, I like that. Yeah, some tricky stuff to consider. You could like throw in a couple dig through times in this list if you've got them, and try that sort of plan out as well.
Yeah, I definitely like the $120 version better.
Oh, this yeah, one, it's definitely a much better deck. But
I like the creativity, though. That's what's always fun about these.
Yeah,
I
mean, sometimes when you're on a restricted budget like this, you got to do what you got to do. So,
if I was going to build, I mean, maybe if we're done talking about the decks, I kind of wanted to like review everything. And I was going to say, as far as the $50 decks go, which deck would you guys choose?
Ooh.
Like between the Drakes, between Spirits, and... you know, all these other versions. Which one do you think is the strongest $50 version?
I like your blue spirits deck. I think that one was strong. I do have a soft spot for my enigmatic one. Mm. Those would probably be my top two.
It depends on where I would be playing it. Like, if I wanted to take it to an FNM, just for my playstyle personally, I think I would take the spirits list and then mm-hmm. add in the like the Rally of Wings and the mm-hmm. the anthem effects.
Yeah,
and go the super aggro route with that, yeah. Or I would play the mono black deck, just yeah. depending on you know meta calls and whatnot.
Yeah, I'd go spirits.
Oh yeah,
I'd go spirits. I think for 50. What about 120? Which of these $120 budget?
Maybe
decks?
The mono black. That one looked really strong. It didn't look like it was losing very much at all.
Yeah, I could go with black or Phoenix though. I think.
I would definitely go with Incarnation. I think that deck is super sweet yeah. and. I don't care how much it loses, like, from the full version. That's such a cool archetype.
Huh. All right. Well, I think there's one more question I wanted to ask before we wrap this up today, because I think we pretty much talked about everything we wanted to talk about. And that question is, you know, we've said this many times before on the podcast that, you know, Pioneer is still, like, one of the most budget formats out there. We have had a lot of price spikes recently, though. Maybe because of, you know, either EDH or, you know, Modern and stuff like that. Would you say that entry into Pioneer is still relatively easy? Yeah, even without these budget decks?
I think so.
I want to hear what your thought is.
Yeah, I think it is. So just going on the Goldfish, like, you know, past 14 days or whatever, the top decks I'm seeing here are 400, 500, 200, 200, 200, you know. And then I go over to the Modern tab, and I see 800, 1200, 1200, 1500. Like, who's paying that much for these decks? Like, bro, play Pioneer. You'll save, like, literally $800.
Yeah, you can build two decks for the price of one.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, to answer the question, I think that this experiment we just did is the biggest reason why Pioneer is a more budget format, is because even if you can't afford the $400 version of the deck, you just get to play the next best card and you're not losing that much power. Like if we're looking at Modern, you know, what's the second best Ragavan? What's the second best Urza's Saga? It's not close to the most powerful version. Whereas Pioneer, you know, yeah, there's certainly the best card for a slot, but overall the card power level is more even throughout the format. So you can play, you know, you can play a Lightning Strike instead of whatever we're playing. You can play Angrath Rampage instead of Dreadbore, and you're only losing, you know, a fraction of a percentage point.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're trying to run, you know, if you're trying to run something instead of Urza's Saga, there's just no way. There's absolutely no way you're going to find a budget version of that card.
It's like
go ahead.
I was going to say, you can basically play your deck in Pioneer at 80% power for half the price of the full price, or of the 100% power one.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, Kevin, you brought up a very good point. Like, the power discrepancy between, like, the best card and the second best card is so much closer in this format. And even if you are on a budget, like, your deck's still going to be quite powerful. Unless you're playing, like, a five-color deck and your mana base is trash. But if you're on one of the one or two-color decks, yeah, you're going to have a very strong deck regardless of how much money you put into it.
Mm.
Yeah, we didn't pick the most budget-friendly decks, and we still got a lot of value out of this.
Yeah.
Awesome. So that's going to probably bring us to the end of our episode. You know, we didn't get super deep in anything other than looking at some very fun deck lists. Mm. We had a lot good time with this. You know, Ryan, you threw out the question of which of the lists we would like to play, but we would love to hear that from you guys who are listening. Which of these deck lists do you think was most interesting? Which one might you pick up? Even just as, you know, a $50 version to be able to play with your friends, you know, get somebody excited about the format mm-hmm. the next time you bring it to FNM. If you guys want to reach us, the best place to do that is on Twitter, at MTGPioneer is our handle there. You can also find a link to our Discord, which where all of the deck lists will be posted, and it's also a great way to be able to chit-chat with us and keep up on the format and other people who are excited about the format.
Yeah, and the Pod Live channel is where you're going to find these lists, by the way.
Do we want to move these to the deck list channel, or is that more for open deck lists?
Up to you. I'd put them in the Pod Live just because they're related to the podcast, so...
Got it.
Because otherwise they get kind of lost and mixed in. But anyways, Mr. Servo Token, can you please give us your socials or whatever, anything you want to promote or anything like that?
Your social security number?
No.
Yeah, so it's a 3-4. No. So, yeah, I don't really use Twitter all that much, but you will find me on there occasionally yelling at Saffron Olive whenever he disses our format. Hmm. And I'm on there at Servo Token. And then I'm also on Reddit, which is much more easy to find me. Also, Servo Token on there. So,
yeah, and on...
we do really appreciate your insight on this episode. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that me and Ryan always have a really good time doing this. Was happy to subject someone else to it, as well as have another brewer. I think that you came up with great lists here and had some good input on ours. So, really appreciate you coming on the show. Open door anytime you're interested in a budget episode because I could do these all day.
Awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's going to wrap up the end of our show. Thank you guys all out there for listening. We are the First Pioneer Podcast, the one and only podcast all about the Pioneer format, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. The First Pioneers are slinging out.